This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Podcast. I'm your host, Jeannie Joseph, and I have a really fun interview for you today. I'm going to be speaking with Steve Kozacik, and he is the new director of animal services at Pima Animal Care Center in Tucson, Arizona. So Pima Animal Care Center is the municipal shelter, which means it's what's called open admissions. That means that any dog that comes in, basically you have to take them. Is that correct?
Pretty much it. We work on a managed intake basis, but yeah, I mean, if somebody insists that we take their animal, then we take their animal.
Okay, great. So this is the updated shelter. I remember the old days when it was the old shelter, but this is the updated shelter. And the shelter was built for, what was it, 230 dogs? Is that?
Roughly 235, yeah.
Yeah, 235 dogs. And just a little weather report, how many dogs do you have there today?
We have about 535.
535 in a shelter built for 235. So this is, I think everybody listening knows what that means. It's a pretty rough situation. And this is not just your shelter. We're seeing this nationally, these kinds of numbers, really the census going up everywhere. What are some of your thoughts about why we're in such a crisis nationally?
Well, we have a situation right now where people are not spaying and neutering their animals. They are not confining their animals. They're not vaccinating their animals, licensing, microchipping. It's all of the above. And so it's not a Tucson problem. It's, as you said, a national problem. And so what we're challenged with doing is educating the public that, you know, we simply cannot continue to take dogs and cats at the same cadence. By the way, the cats are also an issue. It's not nearly as significant as the dogs, but we're over 110 cats right now as well. So, and it's spread on the verge of kitten season.
Right.
So our challenge is how do we manage a community problem being the only open admission shelter in the 9,200 square miles of Pima County?
Wow.
The Humane Society, some of the other nonprofits, the rescues, they can shut their door. They can say, you know, there's no room at the inn. We don't have that luxury.
Right.
And there are some other constraints that I'm generally challenging right now, and that is, as an open admission shelter, can we charge for intake? Can we charge for owner surrenders? Or can we charge when someone shows up and they want to turn in a stray? Sort of a double-edged sword. If we start charging for them, they're just going to abandon them, and they'll wind up coming in the back door through our animal protection service team as a hit by a car.
Right.
So it's a kind of a multi-pronged problem.
Yeah.
Not unique to us.
Yeah.
But certainly nobody quite has figured out what that magic bullet looks like yet.
Right. Really complicated situation. And I think everybody there is, you know, doing the best that they can to give the animals the best care that's possible. But it's just inherently, you know, you're fighting an uphill battle here. Well, what are some of the things? I know you've started a new program of giving away leashes to homeless people, I think, or tell us about that.
Yeah, it's even more than just homeless people. We have, I mentioned our Animal Protection Service, our APS, and if that's our enforcement team. They are out in the community enforcing cruelty, neglect, boarding situations, people beating their dogs, people not feeding their dogs or cats, primarily dogs in this case. And so we have an APS team that right now, I mentioned 9,200 square miles. Our APS unit has 18 officers working three shifts a day to monitor all 9,200 square miles. Needless to say, they're not going to get to every call that comes in, and they're going to prioritize those calls. We have about 1,700 calls on our backlog right now, 1,700 that we're not getting to.
Wow.
900 of those are simply off-leash calls. There's some people in Pick Your Park, or people in Himmel Park, or people in Reed Park. They're walking their dogs off-leash.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jeannie, we're not going to get to those calls. We're out chasing cruelty and neglect and hoarding and all the much more high priority calls. And so what we did in response to try to address those calls, because they're not nothing, mm-hmm. They're just not huge priorities, is that I formed an auxiliary volunteer APS unit whose charge is to go into parks and to approach people, not with a heavy hand, with an educational focus, saying that here's the leash law. Can we offer you a leash or a collar? Here's some treats for your dog. Here's some activity books for your kids to play with. Here's a water dish for your dog. You know, kind of. And we're expanding it. Also, I've gotten some local businesses to step up and offer gift cards to the people who are doing it right.
Right.
So it's not simply a matter of let's go find the people who are running their dogs off leash. If somebody's doing it right, here's a gift card for two movie tickets to a Roadhouse Theater, or here's a $50 gift card for Corbett's or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to educate the public in that manner by offering these incentives and letting them know that it is the law.
Yeah.
You also, the part of the message is that it's not that your dog might be aggressive or it might run up and bite somebody, but number one, you're potentially liable if your soft fluffy goes up and starts playing with some person, and it's an elderly person. They accidentally knocks the person over because they're playing too hard and the person breaks a hip. That's your civil responsibility, and you could be cited for that.
Yeah.
So we're trying to let people know, but to your point, we are giving away the leashes when people need them. If we find homeless people in the parks, and it's not uncommon that we find that, yes, we will give them provisions not only for themselves, but also for their animals, because we want to make sure the animals are well cared for and that they're not running at large.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Great. Okay, great program. So I know the situation is very complex and there's no simple answers, but if you could wave your wand, what would be one thing that you would do? Like if you could, you know, not just starting from the current situation that we're in, but what would you do to change the shelter system? I know the community you've mentioned, what, you know, the changes that need to happen in people's understanding about responsibilities with animals, but what would you do in terms of the shelter system to redesign it if you could start over?
First of all, I've had people suggest, why don't you just build more kennels? The challenge is if you build it, they will come. You know,
right.
Our problem is not that PAC was designed inappropriately or we don't have the right number of kennels. Our problem is out in the community. It's outside the four walls of this place.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I would, if we can start waving magic wands, it's that people appropriately spay and neuter their animals. It's a matter of getting rid of backyard breeders.
Yeah.
It's a matter of shutting down puppy mills and making sure that when retail establishments are sourcing their animals, they're doing it through either shelters or rescues.
Mm-hmm.
Those are just a few examples of where we are systemically broken. Mm-hmm. When I was I served for 15 years on the Tucson City Council, and about 10 years ago, we adopted a puppy mill ordinance, and the gist of it was, if you're going to sell animals at a retail level, and we have some retail stores here, pet stores in town that are selling dogs and cats and everything else, you have to source those dogs through either a shelter or a rescue. That was such a nonpartisan issue.
Yes.
That I had a very, very far right wing and a very far left wing radio talk show hosts who in alternate universes would compete. They were totally aligned with this. This is about the animals. It's about animal welfare. It's about the fact that puppy mills treat these animals horribly. And so they were supportive.
Yeah.
What happened is that we adopted that puppy mill ordinance here in the city of Tucson. And the owner of a retail pet store here in Tucson went and started lobbying the state legislature and was able to get state law, which preempts local jurisdictions from adopting puppy mill ordinances. And so ours was in effect for probably 36 hours, and all of a sudden it was rendered moot.
Wow.
By the state legislature.
Wow.
So another change, you're asking about change, is getting state legislatures nationally educated, or the federal legislature, the Congress, educated nationally that puppy mills are a real thing. They are a challenge for the shelter industry because people are going to stores and paying an exorbitant amount of money for a dog that they can come to the shelter. Jeannie, we're offering adoption for free right now.
Mm.
And so people can go and pay $1,200 for a dog at a retail outlet, or they can come in here and get it for free.
Yeah.
So puppy mills are a real thing. Mm. Backyard breeding is a real thing. Mm. People, I was at a, we have a nonprofit called Friends of PAC. They host as a fundraiser, they host a parade annually. And I was at the parade. People show up with their dogs and cats and pets, and it's a fundraiser for Friends of PAC. And I was standing talking to a guy who had a couple of St. Bernards at this parade. And so the beautiful dogs, what's your plan for them? He says, oh, we're going to have get a couple more litters out of them. And so I'm standing there thinking, we are at a fundraiser.
Yeah.
Our nonprofit is trying to support the shelter that has a 535 dog census right now. And you're out there breeding St. Bernards.
Wow.
Break.
Yeah.
And why are they doing that? Because they're able to make $1,200 or $1,500 a dog when they breed those puppies. So getting legislation that would either curb or force registering backyard breeders and put a cap on the number that they can breed before they're forced to alter the animals, that's another situation. So our problem is out in the community. Our problem is not that we don't have an effective way to manage the shelter. Mm-hmm. It's that we don't have a community that respects the fact that that just because we're open admission doesn't mean we have an endless supply of kennels and an endless supply of staff and an endless supply of volunteers who can come in and do the due diligence and care for the animals. We also have a clinic, and the clinic that we have at PAC is also overstressed, and I know we're coming up on a break, so I can kind of save that piece of the story for once we get out of the break.
I just wanted to mention about your foster program. You have about 500 or 600 dogs in foster now at the time that you have 500 in the shelter, right? Is that correct?
Actually, we have over 850.
Wow, 850 dogs in foster. Yeah. Yeah,
we have 535 in the shelter. We have 850 out in foster.
Wow.
Cats, we have about 110 in the shelter, and we have over 600 out in foster.
Wow.
It's an insane number of animals that the public has simply dumped onto the system, figuring that we'll just figure it out. If you add those, 800 and 500, we got 1,400 dogs, and we got about 700 cats within our system.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to manage. We would be absolutely sunk if we didn't have those fosters.
Yeah. It's an amazing program. And I think our listeners, if you're in a position to foster, it is such a beautiful thing to do. It can be difficult to not be able to keep the dog, but you always have the choice as a foster. You get first dibs if you decide one to keep. I know we've all had foster fails in our lives, so-called foster fails, but it's very, very rewarding to help a dog get out of the shelter and just have some peace and quiet and sweetness and, get them ready for being in a regular home. And also the notes that a dog might have in a shelter in a very stressed environment and, that might deter some adopters. But if you can have wonderful notes and say, oh, well, Harry loves to play and he sleeps with me and he's sweet and he's this and he's that and all this good stuff, then you can change the course of an animal's life by being a foster. So we really want to encourage people to think about that. I know it's not for everyone, but maybe some people out there are saying, I was just talking to someone today, he said he's not sure if he's ready to have a dog. I said, well, why don't you just go foster one and see how it feels to be, because theoretically, what you imagine what it'd be like to have a dog, but until you actually have one, you don't always know. And of course, every dog is different, so you want to just have that experience. Yeah.
Well, and all of that is correct, and you're very well read on this. The situation here is that you can foster to adopt. You can take a dog home overnight. We call them pajama parties. Mm-hmm. They're just out of the shelter for 12, 18 hours, and we're back in. But you're exactly correct. They get out of this stressed environment where you're sitting crammed in a kennel with another dog or two. And it's a, 4x8 kennel, and yeah, the stress, the kennel stress is a real thing.
Real thing.
And it makes dogs over time less and less adoptable. So to the extent that they can get out for a day, a weekend, a week, what you pick your time, our foster options are all over the map to make it really convenient for people to allow to get an animal out of here. And we have medical fosters as well. A lot of times we have our clinic that treats the animals, and they will put the animal out into a home with the medications and with the veterinary protocols that they come back, bring it back to the clinic. We're paying for all the medical care while the thing is in foster and while it's being rehabbed. And we have families that are taking these medical fosters. They're saying, look, I'll take this on while the dog is, or cat is being rehabbed. And then when it's whole again, then we'll put it out for adoption. So we have a lot of options, and
right.
We've got a great community who stepped up to really help out.
Yeah, I know. I've taken some dogs out for ice cream. You know, you just take them out for an hour, right? Or you just take them out for a burger. So, yeah, there's lots of options. All right. Well, we're going to take a short little break. And then when we come back, I forgot what we were going to talk about when we come back. But it was something good, I know. We'll be right back in just a moment.
You know the expression, cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human Animal Connection. I'm your host, Jeannie Joseph, and I'm the founder of the Human Animal Connection, speaking with Steve Kozacik, and he is the director of animal services at a big municipal shelter here in Tucson with over 500 dogs in the shelter, over 800 dogs, you said, in foster care. It's just that's exciting. So there are parts of the community that really care and that are educated and that want to step up. So that's just really wonderful. And we have helped veterans. We'll go to the shelter with them if they're looking for a dog, and we'll help them evaluate the quality of the bond, because it's really important for people not to just pick based upon, I want a St. Bernard or I want a Labrador or something like that, but to really look at the individual dog and see if it's a good connection, and to help people understand, are you looking for a dog that's going to be your running buddy, or are you looking for a dog that's going to be your couch potato and make you feel happy and cuddle all day long? You know, these are questions that sometimes people, adopters, don't always think through, but can make a big difference. Because if you people go in looking for, oh, I want this kind of dog, or this, the one I had when I was a kid or something, and they might end up with a dog that looks similar, but the expectations that the person has and the reality of the dog, that can get a little mixed up. So this is one of the things that we help people that we work with, is how best to evaluate the connection between the person and the dog. Yes. So I bet you have some fun stories that are inspiring, that keep you going over the rough days there in a big municipal shelter.
Well, one of the things that we're trying to do is to curb our intake.
Mm-hmm.
57% of the dogs that we take in are strays.
Mm.
And one of the ways that I'm trying to address that is I've distributed some microchip scanners out to some of the Parks Department administration buildings, so that when members of the public find a dog or a cat that is a stray, they can scan it and they can try and find the owner on the spot and not even bring it to the shelter.
That's great.
Last week, about 8:30 at night, I got a call from a woman that I've known for quite a while, who works at a local hospital, and she said, we just saw a St. Bernard walking down Grant Road, and Grant Road is an arterial here in Tucson. Mm-hmm. It's a big street. So she said, we checked for a microchip and we found the owner, but nobody's called us back. So I have to bring it in to you tomorrow morning.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, well, we have 540 dogs here. We don't need a St. Bernard. Please, you know, I said, you give me a call in the morning if you still can't find the owner, and we will intake it. It was, you know, hard to say, but that's what we're doing here. We're an open admission shelter. Mm-hmm. So I called her in the morning, and thankfully the microchip worked. The owner called them. They said they got some contractors working at their house, and the contractor just accidentally left the gate open. Mm. The St. Bernard decided he'd go out for a stroll, and it turned into a slumber party at my friend's house, but back home he is. And so please microchip your animals. It's a story that is too uncommon. Roughly 15% of the 57% of the strays we get are microchipped. We're offering free microchipping through July 4th right now. We want you to chip your animals. We don't want them in the shelter.
Yes.
So that's a good news story.
That is a great news story. I think that's so important to get those scanners out there, you know, wherever they can, you know, as many scanners as you can get out there, because I think everybody's seen that. They've seen a stray dog wandering and not known what to do. So, yeah.
And the reality is that the vast majority of dogs that go stray, they're within a mile of their home. And so it's not that they've strayed and they've walked from Tucson up to Phoenix 100 miles away. These are dogs that are close to home and they're just out for whatever reason. And even if it's not a threat that they're going to walk and start attacking someone else's animal, they can get hit by a car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or they can get, we have in Tucson, we had javelina and we have other urban wildlife, coyotes. It could wind up getting bitten by a rabid or otherwise urban wildlife animal. So there are dangers outside the confines of your yard that we want to make sure these animals are protected. Yeah. So there are legitimate reasons for wanting us outside of the shelter for us wanting to make sure the animals get home.
Right. Definitely.
You mentioned the fosters. Another story that I would share is that we have a very robust volunteer group.
Mm-hmm.
Here at the shelter. We have 540 dogs, round numbers, and over 100 cats. We would be sunk without the volunteers coming in and walking the dogs and just spending time with them, taking them out into play groups and that kind of thing, just to decompress them and get them out of the kennels. Mm-hmm. One of the programs that we're going to implement, in fact, we have implemented, that's going to kind of come to a crescendo in a week or so, is a program called Paws and Pages. It's where people come out and they simply sit in front of a kennel and they read to the dog for 40 minutes.
Yes.
Now, it might sound weird.
No, it's great. It's a great, I love doing it. You know, the dogs, they just calm right down, the human voice, and, you know, they don't have to do anything. The person's not asking them to perform or sit or, you know, behave a certain way. They just get a little bit of human energy. And it's beautiful to see, because sometimes you'll go in the shelter and people are reading and the whole line is calm. Like not just the dog that's being read to, but the neighbor feels good, and the neighbor over there feels good. It's a beautiful program.
It really is fun. So, and when you start out, the dog might be barking at you right up in your face, and by the end of the session, the dog is making eye contact with you and just kind of sitting listening. So, what we're going to do is there's a condition called aphasia. It's a form of dementia. That can also be brought on by blunt force trauma. In for instance, for our former congresswoman Gabby Giffords was shot in the head, and she lost her ability to speak and to articulate and to understand the written and spoken word. Through pretty significant speech therapy, she's been able to regain much of her speech ability. That is the blunt trauma kind of aphasia. Another kind is it's a progressive, I mentioned dementia, kind of a condition where it progressively you lose your ability to speak, you lose your ability to read, to understand the spoken or written word. So what we have is a group of aphasia members of a local group, Friends of Aphasia, And I've got Gabby Giffords, speech therapist, working with a group of 8 of them right now. And they're working on books, lower level books that they're learning to read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And next Thursday, they're going to be coming in and doing a pause in pages.
Aww.
Just with this aphasia group.
Yeah.
And it'll be so cool to see this group of people who is struggling to articulate the word. You know, like for instance, this is a 25-year-old woman who had a stroke. The book she chose is the Dr. Seuss book, Hop on Pop.
Uh-huh.
In her first session with the speech therapist, at the beginning of the session, she couldn't articulate any of the words. At the end of the first session, she was able to say hop and pop. So she's working on them. By the time she gets down here after 8 weeks, she'll be able to maybe read that book to the dogs. It'll be such a cool experience for the aphasia people.
Mm-hmm.
And the dogs will be sitting there totally non-judgmental.
Right.
And okay, you stumbled over that word, but that's
who cares?
Okay.
Yeah, who cares?
That's totally okay.
As long as I hear your voice and they can feel your energy and your heart. And, you know, in a shelter environment, there's such a need for a moment of individual human to dog attention. And I know the volunteers are doing a great job, but the volunteers at PAC are like, they're like the Marines. They're going to get their dogs walked. You know, you don't want to get in the way of a It's really beautiful to see the level of volunteering that goes on at the shelter, and just to see how much change is possible by just giving a dog some very individual, gentle attention. It's love, you know. It changes the person, it changes the dog, it changes the shelter.
Well, and here's our challenge: is that and it's Tucson. It's over 100 degrees outside. It's
north.
A lot of our volunteers are snowbirds. They're winter visitors.
Ah.
They're here from Minnesota between September and January.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're back in Minnesota outside of the winter months.
Mm-hmm.
So they're avoiding our heat. So right now we are down. We are short volunteers.
Oh.
We need more volunteers to sit and do the things that you just mentioned, as far as mm-hmm. Walk on the dogs, get them out of the kennel, take them to play, mm-hmm. breed to them. And so we're short on volunteers. And one of the reasons this is important is because the dogs need to get out of the kennels, or the kennel stress is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have right now, like I mentioned, about 540 dogs. We have over 50 dogs right now that have been in the shelter for over 100 days.
Wow.
That's 3+ months. That's 52 dogs that have been sitting in that kennel for 100 days or longer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that simply makes the dog less and less adaptable. The stress, yeah. The stress amps up, the reactivity amps up, the mm-hmm. ability to get that dog into a home where it's in air quotes, true personality can shine. They may have lost that true personality 75 days ago after being mm-hmm. stuck in a shelter.
Yeah.
So I ran some numbers. On length of stay and our outcomes in the month of March and the month of May, we adopted or returned to owner almost 700 dogs.
Yeah.
In the first 20 days that they were here. That's in the first 20 days.
Okay.
In the last, well, say from 90 days on, we adopted out fewer than 50.
Wow.
And so it just demonstrates that the longer they're here, the less adoptable they get. And that even really highlights the notion that our volunteers getting them out of the kennels and into a situation where they can really decompress is really critical.
Mm.
We have another partner here in Tucson called Tucson Rescue Now.
Mm-hmm.
It's located at Grant and Swan. It's a shopping center, and it's a woman named Bonnie who used to be a PAC employee. So she witnessed firsthand what the shelter was like, and what she has done is she has opened up a retail store where she will take 8 to 10 of our animals out Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for 6 hours a day. get them into that environment, out of the shelter, and let people come and see them and interact with them in a different location.
It's completely different. Yeah, the dogs are on a couch, you know, so you can sit on the couch next to the dog. You know, you have that eye contact, that nice, soft, close connection, and it's a lot less stressful than, you know, going, you know, to a shelter to look at 500 dogs. How do you pick one? Yeah, so it's a wonderful program. I think that's just terrific. And I know also PAC has a playgroup program, which is just extraordinary, where dogs get out, not just for a walk, but they get the chance to go to playgroup. And I know you have behavioralists who will sort of evaluate to make sure that the dogs of similar energies are playing together, and they're watching over. They're not just leaving dogs in the yard and seeing how it goes. But it's beautiful, because this is an important stress reliever. Is dogs need to play, you know, and they need to play with each other. And that is just a wonderful program. I wish every shelter had a program. I know it's not possible for every shelter, but it really makes a difference when dogs can get out and play. Being in a playgroup for even 20 minutes is the equivalent energetically of a 3-hour walk in terms of what it can do for the dog, and socially it helps them work on their skills. And and when adopters see dogs that do well in playgroup, they're more likely to consider adopting that dog, because, you know, maybe they have, often good adopters have already adopted. So yeah, that's such an important thing.
Yeah, the play group is a big deal, for all the reasons you mentioned. Trying to sort of piggyback on the idea, one of the things that I'm working on out here right now is, as you know, there are two dogs in a kennel. What I'm working on is getting expanded kennels. So it's, instead of a small kennel for two dogs, it'll be a larger space that we can put 5 or 6 dogs in.
Yeah.
So it would be sort of the analog to a play group, but it's really going to be a kennel situation where these 5 or 6 dogs are interacting all the time.
Yeah.
And not just for that 20 minutes. And so people can go by and see those dogs really socialized.
And that's beautiful. I love that.
It'll do a couple of things. It'll do the socialization piece that I mentioned. But what it'll also do is, if I can get 6 dogs into one kennel, it frees up 3 other kennels for them where they had 2 at a time.
Right.
So we're trying to do some creative thinking as to how do we expand the capability of our shelter to house more animals without just going out and building a boatload more two dog kennels.
That's beautiful. I love that, because every dog is different. Some dogs need a lot of social dog-on-dog connection. Other dogs need less, but the ones that need it can really benefit by that. It can really show potential adopters, wow, look at, they all have a happy, they're doing well. This will work in my household. I can see how this could work, because sometimes it's hard to imagine when you go and if you have a dog at home already and you're meeting a stressed dog, you know, how that's going to work. So that's beautiful. Congratulations. I love that.
Well, it's all money.
It's all,
And so that's one of the reasons we're leaning into Friends of PAC even more and more every day. That's our profit. They're our fundraiser. And it's, you know, we need to talk about expanded kennels. We need to talk about, we didn't quite get to the clinic, but we need to talk about expanding our clinic options. Friends of PAC just opened a low-cost clinic called the Friends Pet Clinic, where they're offering low-cost veterinary care. Oftentimes, people, especially in this economy, are reluctant to take on the financial obligation of an animal because of the veterinary costs. And so Friends has opened up their clinic as well. So there are a lot of moving parts to the challenges that we're facing. Census is just a piece of it. But we're not going to find a magic elixir fixer. So we're chipping away at each piece that we can, or in small bites at a time.
Great. Wonderful. Well, thank you, Steve. It's been wonderful to talk with you, and we wish you all the best there. Sounds like you're doing some really good and important things, and every little bit counts.
We appreciate the time to share the story.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Human Animal Connection. We'll see you on the next episode. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to The Human Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human-Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand. only on PetLifeRadio.com.